Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Well, today's quite a revolutionary interview, actually, because I've been wanting to talk to someone who actually knows really what they're talking about around smart cities. And I've been wanting to do that for ages. And I've been very fortunate to get put into a very long Twitter conversation with a lot of people who don't know each other. And thankfully, Richard Godfrey was there. And he's ex-director of digital for a local authority, and actually was on the team who won the World's Smartest City in 2015. And you're also something to do with the AWS City on a Cloud competition. You won that as well, right?
Won that, yeah.
With brilliant. Brilliant. And now you're managing director of Sin City, which is you help with digital efficiency. So
that's correct.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. It was an interesting Twitter conversation.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic. So I think the best place to start is really with the definition of a smart city, because, you know, a lot of people got their fanfares out and they, you know, they sort of got the whistles out and made a lot of noise around smart cities. And I think there's still confusion around what they can do, what they can't do, how they're being used, certainly within the organizations that really need to benefit. Yeah. So what's your definition of a smart city?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So when it kind of was first coined as a phrase, the smart element of it was very much focusing on the technology and having sensors and IoT devices that could talk to each other without any human interaction. Which is all well and good, but that basically puts you into a technology first city. So when I talk about smart or smart cities, actually most projects that you do are for the improvement of the city or for the improvement of citizens' lives. And therefore they are automatically smart. They're smart projects that you're doing. Now, some of those will have technology, some will not. You don't necessarily have to need it, but you don't have to define yourself by whether you've got a nice platform that you can look at that shows you all these different things. Smart is just, for me, is just about being sensible in ensuring that you're taking a citizen first approach to your city, the projects that you're running and what you're looking at. So just saying, oh, we're smart because we've got lots of sensors in, actually is meaningless, because you're just recording information or data. You're not necessarily doing anything with that information to make someone's life improve. So where we were was very much the big IT companies saying, come to us, we've got a big smart platform, you can do all this cool stuff with it. Most of that was meaningless, led to a lot of expensive investments in technology that provided little or no benefit to the citizens of the city. And part of the problem is every city is different. The makeup of the city is different. The jobs in the city are different, the businesses you've got there are different, the diversity, the age groups, everything like that. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all kind of sweeping definition that you can use. But it's, for me, it's basically how can you improve the lives of the people who live in a location, whether that be through technology or side projects. And you mentioned the World's Smartest City. Winning that was actually because of a lot of the work on our circular economy piece. And the only technology involved in that was a platform that kind of brought a buyer and a seller together to be able to have a conversation. Everything else was non-technical. It was about how do you take somebody else's waste or their product and turn it into something useful. Mm-hmm. So to give you the best example, which we pushed at the time, in Peterborough, there was a coffee company called Master Roast Coffee. Hundreds and hundreds of Hessian sacks delivered to them full of coffee beans every month, and all of those would get binned and go in the waste. So we actually put them in touch with a few other people. The Hessian sacks went to a company next door who turned them into bags for life.
Oh, super.
And then pushed them back out again. So again, it wasn't just looking at one small thing of technology is looking at that economy, waste, where our food's coming from. We tried to introduce almost like a 5 mile around Peterborough labeling system as well. So local grown food, supporting your economy. So realistically, we need the smart conversation to move away from being led by the big technology companies that want to sell you a platform, and bring it right back down to, right, what are the actual issues within your city? What do we need to address them? And it doesn't have to be city, it can be town, village, parish, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we can look at improvements to do that. And some of that might have technology in it, and technology will play a part, but it's not kind of the be all and end all to a solution.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I spent a bit of time talking with David Matheson at the, he's from the CDO Club and the CDO Summit, right? Chief Digital yeah. Officer Summit. And I mean, back in, I think it was 2014, maybe 2015, the Chief Digital Officer of New York itself, the town, the city, yeah, actually created so much information that it was, and they made it public. So for example, say you're setting up a new business, which is retail, yeah, which right now, I mean, it obviously is decimated, but you can still gain insights from people movements, from demographics within the area, with information from other businesses within those localities, right? And then that's going to give you a better idea of your product offering, for example, or if you actually want to open a business in that street, right?
Yeah, and I think part of the problem today, especially with the high street, is because it's become massively generic. And I remember as a kid, even from Peterborough, we used to say, well, we're going to go shopping today in Nottingham, because we knew there was a completely different set of shops in Nottingham that we could go to.
Right.
The same if we went to Leicester a lot. I'm a Leicester lad originally, and we'd go there shopping. And again, even if you had the same shops, they often had different ranges within the shops. Whereas today, every city is generic. There's no point going to Nottingham because I'll get the same thing in Peterborough. And it's pushed a lot of the independents out. And actually, one of the smart things we can do is, like you say, is to start looking at the demographics of the city, who we serve in, and do you need all this information? I looked at there was a quite cool project we tried to do once with O2. They put some money forward to put some ideas together, and I put a bid in to them, and they came back to me afterwards, basically said, we couldn't let you win because we don't know if it's possible or not, but we're really keen to look at it. And what we were going to do at the time, and we're talking 5 years ago, possibly more now, mm-hmm. Was Peterborough train station is a very busy, but it's a kind of a hub for lots of other directions. It goes north, south, and east, west. And if there's any delays into London, passengers always get stopped at Peterborough and are let off. Mm-hmm. But what we don't know is who's coming into Peterborough, why they come in, what reasons. So it was kind of almost like having a big interactive board on the wall that welcomes people in. You could link your phone up to it. It would send you vouchers for local coffee shops, 10% off. We wanted to see if we could actually get the actor who played Holly from Red Dwarf to be the visual on it. So it was cool. Almost like a welcome to Peterborough.
That's cool.
You know how grumpy Holly used to be?
Yeah, yeah, completely. Yeah.
But we have people come for the passport office and various other bits. But then on the serious side of it was that understanding the traffic, where it was going, what vouchers were being used. But because Peterborough was this place where all the trains stopped if there were issues going into London, you often had lots of passengers just pushed out with nowhere to go. So it was then to become like an information board of, actually register with us, go and have a coffee, and we'll text you every half an hour with updates to the train service or
super.
Any information that we've got. So you're not just loitering or hanging around one area.
Yeah.
And we had lots of ideas. Eventually it kind of died to death, and we went, this is probably going to cost far too much money. But it was that kind of concept of, do we understand who's coming, why they're coming, what they're coming for, and can we then benefit from a city from that? If someone, Peterborough had a passport office, so people would come, go to the passport office, register, and go home again. And we're like, well, actually, we want to keep them here for longer. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to entice them away from the passport office into town and to spend money within the city? So lots of little things around that you can do that are still smart. You don't have to go and get Holly from Red Dwarf, but
yeah,
you can push it as far as you want to.
Yeah, I saw something the other day with some sort of augmented reality. I think it was at a bus stop. And literally, I mean, you stood there and you just looked out into this sort of forest, you know, through this augmented reality screen there, yeah. But like, there's a lot of sort of publicity about kind of for advertising companies to actually use this sort of thing and personalize it to the individual, yeah. Because, you know, we're giving away so much data to all of these companies on our phones anyway that it's like, well, actually, if they can put a product in front of you with a voucher that you really actually want, the relevance of it becomes actually a pleasure. It becomes enjoyable for a lot of people because they know it's happening anyway. So it's like, well, why not make it more relevant? Yeah. You either opt in or you opt out, right? Is kind of how I'm looking at it. And they're talking about this at the moment. A few people, I think.
But I'm in the process of finishing my second book, and there's an example in that on just even the supermarkets of that kind of personalized service of, if I've shopped in your supermarket for 5 years and every week I've bought a pack of Lurpak, don't send me a voucher for Anchor Butter because I'm not going to use it. But because we've got Nectar cards or we've got Tesco cards, club cards, they know what we shop, so they can send you the relevant information. And Peterborough, I've been gone 4 years now, but I still talk about it a lot. But Peterborough's got a cathedral. It's got Catherine of Aragon buried there.
Oh, wow.
But you can be in the middle of Peterborough and not see the cathedral. It's actually quite well hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not much is done with that. So again, a bit of augmented reality on where you are in the town, what it looked like back in 1528 when Henry VIII was on the throne. It's relevant to that period. But so there's a lot of opportunity to do stuff and bring people in, bring money into the city and support that economy.
Right, with like a sort of a really immersive experience with like sounds and smells, absolutely. And a bit like the Jorvik Viking Centre that we have over in
It's almost like York. A virtual version of that.
Everyone
used to love that. Your car would spin, you'd go back in time, and the first thing you'd do is notice the smell. I'm pretty sure that was everyone's first
awful,
memory
awful smell
of the Jorvik Viking Centre. But
completely.
And there's no reason why retailers can't use that same technology to provide you a more personalized experience based on what they know of where you live.
Yeah, I agree. I think from where I'm sitting, I'm sort of there's always this conversation in my head about privacy and you know, and I think, I mean, I was standing in Boots a few months ago and I bought something in Boots, okay, and I paid using a card. And And what happened was, is when I got the receipt out, it actually obviously had been tracking my purchase on that card from the last time I bought something in Boots, or perhaps 6 months before or something. But the timing was just slightly out, and it was too intrusive, Like I didn't want them to say to me, "Oh, do you want to buy this? Right, we're going to give you £10 off." I didn't want that. I found it too intrusive because actually I hadn't given them permission to market to me in that way, and I didn't appreciate it. It didn't feel good. So I suppose it's about finding out what the hell these people actually will accept in terms of privacy and then giving it to them, right?
Yeah, and it's quite interesting as well because we used to obviously focus on a lot, and there's things that we used to look at called the jigsaw of data, which actually mean you can publish three separate bits of information, but if you could pull it together, you can work out who it is. So you've got to be quite careful on what you are doing. But you then go on Facebook and read what people are posting, you find out more information about them on there than you would anyway.
Yeah.
If Tesco are going to send you £10 worth of vouchers, you're quite happy to have a club card and give them all the information of what you buy, how often you shop, what you spend, the amount of time you spend in the store, all of that information's there. So it's kind of double-edged. People get really angst about it, but at the same time are giving it away freely.
Yes, because they don't have an understanding of it, do they? I mean, that's the major issue.
There's an understanding, or there's I'm getting something in return, which is actually quite valuable to me. So we used to talk about the council. We were trying to do some small demos and trials. And actually, if you said to someone, "Would you be part of this trial? And in return, I'm going to halve your council tax," you'd get, some would say no, but quite a lot of people would go, "Yes, I'm quite happy to have some monitors in my house to measure temperature and dampness and some various other bits, because you're saving me £700 a year. So it's got to be kind of treated responsibly, but also acknowledge that some people are quite open to it, some people are very guarded, and you just have to find the right person for the right thing you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, completely. And it's people who really understand what's going on, I think, first of all, but then also spreading the awareness of it, right? I mean, if you want a smart city to work, the people that are actually in the smart city need to understand what's going on, how their data is being used, right? And then that in the right context can provide them amazing benefits, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's key, is because most citizens aren't engaged or don't understand what the actual outcomes are for them, they're not willing to participate. So one of my pet hates in smart cities is the parking apps, the ones that tell you where free space is on the side of the road.
Okay.
And it's not so much because of what they do. Actually, what they do is quite useful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got 5,000 cars coming into a city on a day,
yeah,
and 1,000 have the app and 4,000 don't,
mm-hmm,
what I then want to see from these car parking app companies is kind of the benefits of using the app. So mm-hmm, how much time have you saved? What's the effect of that on emissions? And then obviously the knock-on effects. But the actual outcome you're trying to get to through these isn't that you or I can park quicker. The outcome is that we're reducing pollutants in the air. The outcome of that is we have better quality of life, better lung capacity, less illnesses, that kind of thing. So who's measuring that? Who's measuring the hospital inputs? How many people are coming through with asthma? How many kids have got asthma? Have we improved the air quality? And something that people need to understand is that might actually take 15 years,
right,
of using that. Until you start to see those improvements, you might have to almost go a generation before, wow, you start to see that those huge improvements coming through, depending on the project. So
mm-hmm,
it's great that they're doing these car parking apps and saying, oh yeah, we'll do a 2-year pilot and we'll measure it.
Right.
But they're not selling it to the citizens of going, actually, what we're trying to achieve is that there's less nitrogen dioxide in the air. We think that will mean that we'll have less illnesses, we'll have less people having to be treated by the NHS, we'll be able to do X, Y, and Z more. And that is the ultimate outcome from a smart project.
Yeah.
If you look at it and just go, well, you'll be able to park a minute and a half quicker than you can do without the app. So what? Yeah. It's to most people, it's irrelevant. Half will get the bus in. Some will just go and park in a car park anyway. And actually, if you're really trying to improve car parking, don't have on-street parking at all.
Right.
Just have a big park and ride or a big multi-story that everyone can park in.
Yeah, park and ride is good. I'm a believer in that, definitely. So
it's just about that. Mm-hmm. Smart has gone, here's the technology, we can do it, we can put sensors in, yeah, we can measure it, but the actual smartest solution you can do might be a park and ride.
Got you. So it's like, what outcome do you want them to aim for, right, in setting it up? It's like, because they need a payoff, right? Like you know, it's all very well saying, oh, well, in 10 years time, this could happen, but they want like payoff. They want immediate payoff. So I suppose it's setting it out and saying, well, like in all digital transformation projects, right? I don't like that word transformation, but that's, you know, the kind of standard, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's always, you know, kind of like, well, what's the low hanging fruit? How can we implement this new technology or even technology that's been around for 5 years, because we haven't done it yet, in order to make people's lives better, but also improve like the bottom line. I mean, that's also important, isn't it? Otherwise, what's the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, it's hugely important. And if we go back to that example, the bottom line is ultimately we want the NHS to be better funded. We don't want them to spend so much money on certain illnesses, or we want people to be able to be preventative rather than dealing with the outcomes of it. So if I said to you, here's an app because it'll make you park quicker, that's one thing. If I said to you, here's an app because we're actually trying to lower pollution rates, and we believe the next generation of children, of which a lot of people have got kids, yeah, we believe they will grow up healthier, happier, and with a better life,
mm-hmm,
would you do it?
Yeah.
And there's a way of kind of communicating the message of what you're trying to achieve to the citizens to get them actively involved in it so they feel part of it and they're actually making a difference to people's lives off the back of it. It's not a technology for technology's sake project. It's a, come on, we're trying to do some good. We are trying to improve it. It will take time, but if that 1,000 users this year becomes 3,000 next year, becomes 10,000 the year after, then we're in a good place and we can really start to see some of that evidence change. So what I'd like to see is some of these parking app companies or any company that believes it's in the smart city world to take that longer view and say, actually, we do employ scientists, we do employ air quality people, we employ or we work with universities, we're doing research. What's the bottom effect of reducing NO2 levels? I think that's right, NO2, yeah.
Think
and,
so.
And what does that mean for people? Not just, here's some sales guys who are going to tell you it's smart. And I think really, if you can put together a team of all like combined skill sets and say, we're doing these projects for X, and here's almost the team that are going to be doing the research, and we're going to fund them for a few years after we've implemented it, then I think you'll get into the crux of what being smart really is, and you can start to get buy-in on that.
Got it. Yeah, because technology does always seem to come first. But, you know, like we were talking just before recording, right? You know, people need to come first. And you've sort of talked around that a lot as well. And you've mentioned the circular economy, yeah? So it's like the amount of food that could be saved, yeah, and given to hungry people. Like, if you can connect all of these applications together, and you can connect transportation into that, And you can make it easy for people, because everything needs to be easy. Like, I mean, I just renewed my car insurance. Yeah. I didn't go onto 50 different sites myself and go and look for, you know, I went to one of the big companies and I typed it in and I compared all the stuff and then I got the cheapest one. Yeah. Which would have been £1,000 cheaper than anything else if I'd have gone back to probably the company originally. And this is the same. This is why people use Amazon. Because it's easy. They can go, oh, I want that again, one click, and they can order it, right? So how we gonna kind of encourage people to move beyond their vision of where they think they are to where we really need to get to with this?
Yeah, I think almost dropping the moniker smart city is a starting point, just because to me it's got so many connotations of digital and IT.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I've done a presentation where I did talk about Compare the Market and a few others. And for me, the key word, and I mentioned it before, is efficiency. And actually what they're allowing you to do is be more efficient with your time.
Yeah.
And there's obviously kickbacks for the company, but parking apps, as good as they are, they're about being more efficient. So how is traffic being monitored into a city? You want that journey to be as efficient as possible. How's your healthcare within the city? You want that to be efficient.
Mm-hmm.
How's the food situation? Where's it coming from? How far is it traveling? You want efficiency of kind of food from field to table. And if you can start to reframe it in people's brains that what you're trying to do is really create an efficient city, an economic city, an efficient city, whatever you want to do it, it starts to get a bit more traction, I think, and a bit more buy-in to the end results that you're trying to get to. But yeah, human efficiency is massive within it. So can I give you more time back? Can I give you more back in your wallet? And all those things. We used to teach, we used to go down to residential homes and that. We had a bus that we filled with laptops. And it was a council-led initiative, but we didn't turn up and teach them how to do their council tax online or how to pay their bills. We actually went and taught them how to do Go Compare, how to do online banking.
Oh.
So it was stuff about, it's almost like you said, how could you be £1,000 better off this year from using the internet? Well, here's some comparison websites that will show you whether you're on a good deal or a bad deal.
Yeah.
Rather than having to phone every company in the old yellow pages and go through getting quotes. And it's that kind of digital efficiency. I talk a bit about Uber versus a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
The efficiency of standing on the street waving your arm trying to flag one down versus pulling out a phone, tapping it, and it telling you exactly where that car is, how long it's going to be, where it's picking you up.
Yeah.
And if you can think about efficiency of people, efficiency of data, efficiency of your goods within the city, then you can start to build an overall concept or a strategy or a plan that actually says, okay, how are we going to move us forwards to become this kind of pseudo smart city? And it's not, let's go and chuck loads of sensors in, hope it tells us something. It should be, we understand our city, we've worked in it for a long time. Every city is different. You go to Eastbourne, it's quite an elderly population. It's
still
very different to Brighton where I live.
Do you know what? I crashed into the back of my dad's car. I never forget it. He was looking at this woman and I looked at this woman. He stopped his car and I crashed into the back of him in Eastbourne.
I'm saying nothing.
No, I'm saying nothing either.
No. But again, it is very different. So a plan that you come up with for Southampton is going to be different to Portsmouth. It's going to be different to Brighton. It's going to be different to Eastbourne, even on the south coast.
Yeah.
And Peterborough had a huge issue around sort of social care, health and social care. The age you're meant to die at. Not that you meant to die at.
I have no idea.
But
you've caught me with that one.
It was 10. There were 10 years between the wealthiest area and the poorest area in Peterborough. Life expectancy.
Yes.
That's the word I'm looking for. Not when you're meant to die. Literally 3 miles apart was 10 years.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, well, that's where we're going to focus solutions on. And yes, there might be. We might need to put some tech in. We might need to record some stuff because we actually don't have any data that tells us why that's like it is. But once we've collected the data, we need to do something with it. So one of the other examples I give a lot is around attainment levels in schools.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend loads and loads of money on ensuring that lessons are the right length, that the lighting in the school is the right color, the classes are the right size. We do all this stuff. And then we give everyone 3 hours homework. And okay, that's fine if you're a single kid in a nice home with nice bright windows and you can sit at a desk and do your work. If you go home to a grotty house that's a bit damp, it's dark, you've got 5 siblings, it's only 3 beds, the likelihood is your homework is not going to be as good as it could be. Yeah. And your attainment levels will go down. And if that's a bit of a spiral, then what will generally happen is the education team will step in.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the fix is the housing team.
Yeah.
And it's improving the quality of housing and their living conditions that actually will push them up. And that's why seen in the press today, the Marcus Rashford piece on free school meals.
Oh, yes.
The mm-hmm. fact that we've had to have a footballer step in to say we should be feeding our kids who can't afford to eat.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. It should have happened ages ago, right?
Yeah, and you see how much you talked about food wastage, how much wastage there is. And there's so much more we can do if we understand the underlying problems, not just the problems we see kind of at the top level.
Completely. And also, if you plug it into let's just say you've got a nice big city, you've got lots of potential places to grow crops and to have underground lighting so that you can grow certain things. You can really, and then you've got like the power supplies, which may have surges from time to time and things like this. And if you plug in all this infrastructure and the wastewater and all these things, it really does become circular, doesn't it? Because then you've also got like, foods that are basically out of date, but you don't want to throw them away. So what do? You throw them to the animals who eat them, right? Yeah. Or, you know, it's a no-brainer, really.
Well, yeah, we've all heard stories of wonky vegetables and things not been accepted by supermarkets and that. And it's kind of like, this is crazy. You've got people who can't afford to eat and we're throwing a cucumber away because it's got a kink in it.
Yeah.
It's a cucumber, for God's sake. Just eat it. It's not hard. And again, on that circular thing, even mentioning foods, Marmite is probably one of the best examples. It's a waste material from another process that kind of becomes Marmite. So we used to talk about, even if you own a company, you've got a certain type of machinery. If you only run 9 till 5, why can't you let a small startup use some of that machinery from 5 till midnight? In return, they might do something for you. And so really what we started to look at was putting that platform together that said, okay, I've got this or I need this. How can we talk? How can we communicate? And kind of mutually benefit each other from working together a bit more. So many offices and places close the doors at 5:30. They're locked up and they're left for the night.
Yeah.
They don't need to be. There's other uses that we could do with some of those buildings and reprioritize what we think is important and then kind of make the changes off the back of it. But yeah, the fact that we've got people who can't afford to eat or kids that can't afford to eat in 2020 is ridiculous and something that cities and that should have been looking at for years. And there's so many kind of solutions you can do that it annoys me that we're still talking about it to this day.
Well, also the homeless problem. I mean, you know, once we come out of all of this COVID stuff, like that homeless problem is just going to go back to normal, I'm afraid. It might not, but I think the way I'm feeling at the moment, it may do. Yeah. I mean, the local church, they've been feeding the homeless every day since the whole thing's been happening. Literally, they've created a kitchen there for everyone, right? So the people come in, like they feed like 30 people a day. I mean, I only live in a small city, yeah. But the whole thing is kind of just like, well, then it makes you look at like what do you really want to achieve? Yeah, it all comes back to what do you want to achieve and how much do you care? Like, do you really want to make it happen, or are you just sort of talking about it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's in, even on that attainment example. If again, so the solution we said is to improve the housing, but the short term solution might be to keep the school open till 6 o'clock. Do your homework at the school and have a meal at the school. The amount of times I watch programs where, I don't know, they might be in Thailand or something, and the locals get up at 4 a.m. to cook and feed the monks. Yeah. Or you see in India that they're creating vast pots of curry and things, and they feed people. They feed thousands of people that come through the temples and that. Yeah. And you're kind of like going, they can get it. They've got this sense of community, and let's say they're being smart about what they do, but we're not. We're quite a selfish kind of society, I think. And there's a lot more. I spoke to a homeless guy the other day in Brighton, mm-hmm. and we were having a chat, and he said basically that now things are returning to normal. There's not so many beds in the hotels. It's harder for him to get a place and everything else. And we ended up having a semi-decent conversation about kind of the issues he was facing. Mm-hmm. And again, he's a young lad, been through foster, kind of been kicked out at 18 and been homeless for 4 years.
Yeah.
And you're kind of thinking, but he probably just needs somewhere or somehow just to home him, get him a job, prioritize him over the needs of some of the others, and kind of give him some confidence in himself that he can actually go out and work and earn for a living.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just... probably, I think, as I've got older and got kids myself and that, you kind of start to think about things like that more and see a lot of the kind of injustice that goes on. But yeah, there's so much you can do, and technology is an element of it. But as a society, we can also become smarter in decisions we make, things we do. We talk about clothing that's just become almost throwaway these days. I mean, the amount of celebrities that get criticized on Twitter because they've worn the same dress twice.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You're like, that's ridiculous. You're setting the expectation there that you should buy something, wear it once, and put it in the bin. Yeah. And again, I'm not going to tell you how old my T-shirt is, but it's been worn more than once. I can tell you that. It will keep going until it's unwearable. But again, yeah, it's just that almost very quick, fast, throwaway lifestyle that we need to pause now, rethink exactly what we do, where we do things, how we do things. And yeah, we can actually all become smart cities. And it doesn't just mean we're going to put tech in or do that. And it may be that we need the Internet of Things sensors. They might need to measure air quality so we understand exactly how bad it is at what times and when. And then we can look at sensible solutions. But it's got such a huge impact on the citizen that we need them to adopt some of these ideas and some of these ideals, that you can't exclude them and make it a tech-based project, because most people switch off as soon as they think something is an IT project or tech-led. They switch off. They're not interested. And actually, you just have to turn that conversation and make it much more about, we're going to give you a better life, better quality of living. This is what we're going to do. Consult with them, ask them their opinions, and then kind of measure that and make some changes.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So the next steps really over the next sort of few years, I think, are just looking at what can really make a difference. From where I'm sitting, it should be the people first, definitely. And it should be the food first, the accommodation first, the air quality, and then the healthcare. And then we look at other things. But then, you know, in fact, there's always a payoff. If you're giving someone good food, then there's less people going to the doctor because they're less sick. Yeah. So there's always this payoff, isn't there, between healthcare versus this versus that. And I think UK is the great place to trial this out because, you know, we have the National Health Service. And once we get that to become even more lean than it is, then we can really work out a lot more about, you know, if this guy eats fish and chips every day, yeah, then he's going to get sick. But until you know what they're doing, you can't actually make any adjustments, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the hardest things is implementing something in a local council environment that benefits the NHS because the budgets don't work. And this is where you keep butting heads with people is, why as a council should we invest in this when we're not the beneficiary of it? So instead of the government throwing £10 million at autonomous vehicles that no one really cares about yet, let's actually work out how do we make a model whereby as a city we can come together, each of the individual components, whether it's the charity sector, voluntary, NHS, council, can come together and can have a single funding to deliver these projects. It's like you say, if someone's upbringing is made better quality, better health, everything like that, better quality of living, the payoff to every other service in the future is massive. But they don't work out how to fund that kind of long-term project. They want that two-year, three-year payback. Yeah. We put a bid in Peterborough a few years ago. I think Manchester actually won the money, but we did a bid called Your Home as the Hub. Mm-hmm. And it was about having sensors in someone's home across the city. So we were looking for about 500 different houses within the city.
Right.
From a mixed range of employed, unemployed, shift workers, families with kids, families with no kids. And really just to get an understanding of almost how they live their lives. And we kept adding little bits in that said, okay, well, once we can measure what time they get up, electricity usage, water usage, we can take their energy performance certificate. We could potentially take all their shopping information, what they're buying, what they're eating. We can do air quality. We can do traffic noise. And we could actually, there's loads more you can think of. You can actually build a really good picture of what's actually going on in locations within the city because they're fixed, but also by demographic as well. And then you can start that long-term planning of, okay, we think we understand some of these issues. And again, it comes back to that. If I offered you free council tax for a year, would you let me have access to what you've bought that year, what your electricity usage is, what your gas usage is, and all those things? And simple things like we see the elderly struggle with heating in the winter. We give them a winter fuel payment.
Yeah.
Why don't we manage their account and have a sensor that if the temperature drops below 17 degrees within the house, that the gas bill, the heating gets turned back on until it's 21.
Yeah.
And then we cut it and the government and the council pay that difference and it comes out of that tax allowance, that fuel allowance, sorry. And there's so many little things you could think of and collect information on. And then you can build that really good picture of, okay, we really understand our city. We understand the citizens, what they do, where they go, how they're living their lives, even based on what the weather's doing. So you could look at, is the council, for example, getting worse phone calls that are angrier about more less important issues when it's really wet and miserable? Or are they getting them when it's a really hot, sunny day?
Of course.
And actually, you know, it's probably people's mood is often set by the weather. But are we taking that in as a factor to how we're delivering services?
Got you.
I used to joke about... We used to talk about the police and crime will go down in a heat wave because it's just too hot.
Yeah.
there's a period where it will go up because everyone's got their windows open and burglars might be opportunistic.
Yeah.
But if it gets to 35 degrees, let's say it's an absolute scorcher, you'll probably find it drops off again. So when we're thinking about how we're policing a city, are we saying, okay, what's the weather looking like for the next week? And therefore, have we profiled that against the type of crimes we normally see.
Okay.
And that then starts to you thinking about, okay, we can be much, much smarter. It's not just, well, let's put 100 on the streets every single day and have 200 in the office every day. It's some days we might need to put 150 on the streets just because we know the weather patterns and everything else that's happening are slightly different.
Got you. So you're basically making the policing more flexible based on the weather. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the mood.
Just look at past statistics, what the weather was like. We've got all that information. The Met Office have APIs that you can pull weather data from.
Yeah.
But people aren't really looking at that. They're just almost day by day going on the number of staff they've got. And if you run a call centre, if you know it's going to be awful on Monday morning, put more people in the call centre because you're probably going to get an influx of calls and they're probably going to be angrier than they are on a Tuesday if it's a really hot day and nice and sunny. So you can just be a lot smarter about decisions that you make and kind of some of the opportunities that it gives you.
Got you. So it makes resourcing a lot better and wastage a lot less, right? I mean, that's what we're looking for, is efficiencies in everything, right? And if we start off in sort of with the low hanging fruit, then we can kind of have, you know, the longer term, medium term goals, right? And put all these things into a proper plan instead of just say, oh, well, we can do this. Let's go and collect the data. Because a lot of the time it's like, let's go and collect the data. It's like, well, what's the point in collecting all that data if you're not going to do anything with it, right? It's like...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very interesting conversation. Thank you. Yeah.
That's, no problem at all.
That's brilliant.
Focus on efficiency and it'll all start to fall together.
Super, super. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Oh, and if people want to find you, they look for Syn City, and that's SynCity, yeah?
Yes, it is. The email, the website is www.syn-city.co.uk.
Super.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.